This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Hi, this is Michelle Spencer, the founder of the Legal Learning Development Network, and I am moderating a group for this podcast on training IT for soft skills. So we're going to kick off with our first topic, which is what are the top three skills that an IT person should build? And Jim, you want to get us started?
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Michelle. Hello, everyone. My name is Jim McKenna. I'm the Chief Information Officer for Fenwick & West and a longtime ILTA member and volunteer. I think this is a great question. And from my perspective, the top three skills that an IT person should build are one, technical expertise, two, the ability to communicate, and three, the ability to use empathy when working with the people that they support. Thank you.
Great. How about you, Stuart? What are your top three?
Yeah, this is Stuart Cook. I'm the director of IT systems here at Graves Doherty in Austin. And naturally, I would have to agree with Jim that you've got to have the technical skills, otherwise you have nothing to offer. In addition to that, I think sometimes IT people take themselves too seriously. I think you need to have a good sense of, I'm not the most important person in the world, and really my clients, which is my people I'm trying to help, they are the most important. And so, you know, not taking yourself too seriously, I think would be, I don't know if that's a skill or not, but it's certainly a characteristic that I would look for. And the ability to analyze and solve problems, just that doesn't just apply to technology, but I think the same skills apply in a lot of areas of problem solving. A person's got to be able to analyze and figure out what the root of a problem is that's presented to them. And that's extremely important, I think, as well.
Great, great. And how about you, Luke?
Yeah, hi. My name is Luke Schneblin. I am the manager of learning and development at Shook, Hardy & Bacon. And I actually have a lot of firsthand experience with this personally and members of my team as well in coaching and assisting IT folks enhance their soft skills. You know, I think Jim and Stuart touched on some of the ones I was going to say, so I think it's a little unfair that they got to go first. But in a way, I think one of the biggest things that I've noticed as we've enhanced our collaboration opportunities, emails, group meetings, incorporating Microsoft Teams and Slack. So I think moving up my list is written and verbal communication skills. I think that sometimes our IT peers have a tendency to kind of lock in, do their job, and try to do it well. And I think what they forget is there's this whole wonderful law firm full of people around them. And they might miss out on a chance to build a relationship with coworkers, attorneys, or whoever they work with. So I think that there's a lot you can gain from that. The second one I'd add, since, like I said, mine were kind of stolen, would be teamwork. One of the biggest opportunities, I think, to grow your skills and do better work is to work on a team. And I know people enjoy personal successes, but I think you can see a lot of success when you are all working towards a common goal, whether it be a launch of a new cloud DM solution or something as simple as like a new database or just a fix. There's a lot to be gained from teamwork. And when it goes well, it's pretty awesome. The last I'd say would be a blend of being adaptable. So not just doing your day-to-day, being able to kind of pivot, say, hey, we might try a different way. I loathe when people say it's always been done this way. That's why we do it. And I think presenting alternative solutions. So I'd say adaptability in one regard. And then to flip that kind of to what Stuart was saying, the ability to problem solve. So yeah, I hear it firsthand, people complaining like it's never going to get done on X date or there's no way we can do this. But when you get a group of people together or, you know, talk to your manager about here's an action plan, I think we can get this done. I think there's a lot to be said about being an effective problem solver.
I definitely agree with everything that all of the three of you have said, and I guess my top three would be empathy, communication skills, and problem solving, because that's such a critical piece for IT folks. But really, you've got to have, I think, all of the things that everyone has said to really be that well-rounded person. And I love the teamwork aspect because, you know, a lot of times IT departments can get kind of siloed and forget that it all connects together, and then it all connects to people. And if you don't have those people parts, then you're really going to have issues with the success of the department and the individuals within the department within a firm. So our next talking point was, what experiences have you had in trying to train staff that didn't want to learn? And Luke, you want to kick us off on this one?
Yeah, and kind of like I said in my introductions, I've had firsthand experience with this. And I think that, and Michelle, you mentioned this in the beginning about the silos. I think that people tend to, and I'm making a generalist statement, people tend to come into work and want to do the work that's in front of them and not break out of their box. They want to be good at what they do. And sometimes when, you know, there's a fork in the road, that can really cause a lot of stress. And I think that with training IT staff in particular on soft skills, they're immediately kind of like, what is this? Why do I need it? And so presenting that information in a way with realistic scenarios, getting teams together, so not just individuals, say, hey, you know, take this 15-minute e-learning on empathy and you're going to be a genius and all of it, you're going to be the nicest person ever. I think it's, from my experience, the best experiences I've had is when you can separate an IT team or a group of individuals from their work, completely free of technology, start having a dialogue on, you know, what are the opportunities to make your team better? What are some things that might have been causing you grief or pain? Really can help drive towards a better working environment. I think all too often people get kind of stuck in their cubicle or office, clock in for the day, and then just want to clock out at the end of the day. And I think if you don't create those opportunities to get to know each other, talk about what's going on in the world or in the workplace or with projects, you don't really expand your professional growth. And I think there's a lot of opportunity there.
I agree completely. How about you, Stuart? How have you worked with people that didn't want to learn?
Well, that's an interesting question for me in particular right now, because I've been in this job for just over 2 years, and I think the first 6 months that I was here, I had one staff member who acted like not only did not want to learn, but didn't want to be here, and yet had been on the job for quite a long time and had institutional knowledge. I mean, it wasn't the situation where, well, it almost was a situation where I thought we were going to have to part ways, but I don't know exactly what I did or didn't do or whether it was really myself, but I think that what happened was over a period of time we came to trust each other. And the thing that changed was just an attitude change, maybe in my part and the person's part, but that willingness to just stick in there and encourage a person and give him the sense that, yes, I am listening to you and your ideas are important. All of those things were sort of, I think there was a lot of impediments, emotional impediments in the way to wanting to learn or wanting to be an effective member of the team that had to be overcome. And so it wasn't a training issue. I don't think it was more of a relationship issue, but that was my most recent and most memorable experience. And you know, the HR director here came up to me and said, "What? I don't know what you did, but so and so is a different person." And I thought, "I don't know what I did either." We just kind of kept at it, and I think that was a success that I can't I don't really take credit for it. I think it was just the sense that we finally got to a place where we trusted each other and could work together. And now the tremendous openness to learning after that. That's been my experience.
Great. And how about you, Jim?
I think this is another good question, a good topic. So in no particular order, one experience that I've had is that sometimes people are really, really afraid of being wrong. And I think what's important as a teammate and then also as a leader to either set the culture or encourage the culture to head in the direction that it's not about being right, it's about learning. So it's okay to be wrong. We just have to learn from what we just experienced. It's okay to have the concept, for example, that our job is to make things better. Our job isn't to make things exactly the same forever. Our job is to perpetually make things better. And then the other of which is occasionally a very candid conversation with people, all done politely and respectfully and such. I've had the experience a time or two where somebody might say, you know, I've had 10 years experience doing X. Okay, well, that's a valid point. When you work in technology, another way to look at that is you've had 2 years worth of experience 5 times in a row. The goal is that we always have to keep freshening our skills and such because technology marches forward. And if we don't march forward, then we get left behind. Why don't we start marching and we can do it together?
Agreed. And to kind of echo some of the points that all of you made, and I think Stuart's experience really amplifies this, most of the time it's a boss issue if you've got people that aren't motivated. And it, like Jim said, it's helping people understand that it's okay to be wrong. You don't have to know everything, but you do have to be making that effort to learn. And then also empowering them, because I personally have worked for people who were micromanagers. And I think if you work for someone like that and you don't feel trusted or empowered, then you tend to start to shut down. And I think when you do open those communications, build that relationship and show trust, then that's when you're going to get the best results from your people. So moving into that, talking about how could we make training IT with soft skills better, Stuart, would you like to lead us off on that?
I did have a thought actually about that, and it was based on something Jim or Luke said, I don't remember now, but that not wanting to be wrong. Why is it that people are afraid to be wrong? And well, no one wants to be wrong. I mean, we would always like to be right all the time. But I think it has something to do with self-confidence, that if you know, generally speaking, feel like, hey, I'm a competent person, and most of the time I know what I'm doing, and I, you know, feel good about myself, then if you make a mistake, like, oh, okay, well, I can learn from that. But if you feel like, gosh, I'm wrong all the time, no one listens to me, nobody likes me, and then I'm wrong, yeah, again, I'm wrong again, and then you just, you know, you fall deeper into your sense of self-loathing. And so what could be done to make it better is to help people see when they have done something right. I think some management technique that I recall from somewhere was catch people doing something right. And yeah, point out to people when they have done something good. I use humor a lot in my work, and we had a situation where we had all of our multifunction printer copier scanners were replaced, and it involved a good bit of configuration and a lot of headache and redoing things. And at the conclusion of that, I was on a website. I thought, there's a certificate template for Word. I made up a certificate for the person who was responsible for this, and it said, congratulations on completing another terrible printer refresh, or something to that effect. I had his name on it. I put it in a frame, printed it out in color, signed it, handed it to him. And, you know, it's nothing you want to keep in a scrapbook forever, but it was just like a little lighthearted way of saying, hey, I hear you. I know what that was terrible. And you did it, and congratulations. So I think encouraging people when they do something right is going to build that sense of teamwork and sense of, hey, you know, I do things right. And if I make a mistake, so, hey, I can learn from it.
Great. Jim, how about you? What are your thoughts?
I love that example.
Yeah. So awesome.
Yeah, I'm stealing that one.
Right. I think it's great. How can you make it better? So trying to build upon that great example, I think having an environment where you celebrate successes and it's okay to recognize accomplishments is really, really important. And that sounds like a simple statement, but I'm amazed at how often in our pressure-driven world that we rarely take a moment to kind of look back at what we've accomplished and, you know, just have a moment of acknowledgement and such. I've had the experience, I'm quite proud of this, of transforming a culture of not liking the concept of change management into an opportunity where on a weekly basis, effectively, it's kind of like show and tell for adults about, hey, look at what I'm going to do, and this is going to be great. And it becomes something that people, you know, I can say that they universally look forward to it like a holiday celebration, but instead of it being, oh gosh, you know, there's another meeting, it's an opportunity for a person to demonstrate, one, their technical capability, their creativity, practice their communication, have other people in the room go, for example, oh gosh, if you're going to do this, then I better do my thing after or before, or letting somebody know, I understand that you want to do that, but there's something big happening at the firm and perhaps we should navigate around that. And that's an opportunity where you help everybody not be wrong. Even if the request gets changed, you put everybody into a position where they can be more right. And collectively, after the fact, we all breathe a sigh of relief and have something positive to talk about. I mean, that's one example of how you can make something better and accomplish some strategic objectives at the same time.
Totally agree. Celebrating wins is really, really important. And just to kind of build on that a little bit is also having, you know, kind of after action reviews where you look at, okay, well, where are the areas that we could have done better also, but make sure that you have both in there. How about you, Luke?
I would say specifically for soft skills with an IT group, don't lead by calling it soft skills, because they'll immediately shudder to the fact that it's something lovey-dovey, cushy stuff they don't need to know. But create a kind of like I mentioned before, an environment where you can bring people together to have the conversation. Like Jim mentioned, you know, I go to a regular change management meeting and it's a bunch of IT leaders, and you can kind of tell when you go around the table the different type of communication skills people have, and the way they kind of stress important points or the way they don't pay attention when it doesn't matter to them. And I think it's some of those soft skills that people need to develop are apparent. And that's just in the comfort of your own IT peers. That's not in front of attorneys or other people that you don't directly work with. I think Stuart mentioned just the ability to listen. And I think that if you're on the receiving end of someone going through a tough time or working through a problem, just having and lending an open ear can make the situation a ton better. I mean, he shared a perfect example. And then going back to Jim's point on what's wrong with being wrong, I think leading with, you know, it's okay to fail, and you know, understanding and working through, like you said, Michelle, about the after action review. You know, we might not get this right the first time, but we'll learn a lesson from it, and with that lesson we'll kind of be able to move forward and make things better in the future. You know, well, that's one thing I'd really love to, and I know it's a tough topic, but I'd love to see more of ILTA do, is talk about failures, maybe take some from various firms or be able to submit them anonymously, because we're all upgrading our DMs. We're all going in the new version of Windows. If there was a way to kind of share our stories or share these types of stories like we're talking about now, both great, you know, wonderful examples that are usually shared at ILTACON, or, you know, what are some of the stumbling blocks that happen? What are these common things that you're seeing? I think that helps the next batch of leadership really understand what kind of the workplace the IT world is in a law firm.
I agree wholeheartedly. You know, there is this culture of perfection inside law firms that permeates the IT culture as well as all of the rest of the firm. And I really think that if we shared a little more of our failures, it would help, you know, people understand that that's okay. You know, if everything went perfect on every single day, we would all be living in utopia and we wouldn't be human. Which, you know, if we're scared of the robots taking over, that's exactly the mindset to have.
Yep.
So next up, we're going to talk about imparting the skills that an IT person should have. And I wanted to just talk really quickly about two practical takeaways that I'd like to share with folks that were made big changes for me personally. One is the book Crucial Conversations, and then the follow-up Crucial Confrontations by the Vital Smarts folks. Stuart mentioned, or maybe it was Jim, you know, a lot of times when we're having communications and working with people, that a lot of times we'll assign a meaning, you know, and people don't intend to make a mistake. And those two books were really life-changing for me in looking at my interactions with other people and not assigning meaning to those, but then also with having those difficult conversations that we all have to have all the time. Delivering bad news is something that all IT people do all the time. And there are good ways to do that and bad ways. And so I think a great idea would be go through the Crucial Conversations book with your team, maybe, and talk about it and get those conversations out in the open. And then the second thing are the 5 dysfunctions of a team that Patrick Lencioni did. And they actually have facilitated sessions. I've done those with a couple of my clients, and those work really well for improving your conversations and your communication. So how do you impart the skills that an IT person should have? Jim, you want to kick that off?
Sure, happy to. So for context on this, I think it's important to note that I've been working now, I think we're coming up on 27 years, and the majority of that have been in supervisory roles. So that's going to color my answers just a little bit. So I'm a huge fan of the concept, you got to lead by example. And what I mean by that is not to create a team that operates exactly like me, because Lord knows we are much better when we have a variety of diverse perspectives and talents, you know, approaching a problem. What I mean more so in terms of things such as, I've never found a situation where people weren't appreciative of a timely response. Doesn't have to be real time, but it should be near time. Succinct and factual communications, particularly in the written form, are prized within law firms. And an easy way to get a concept across to people who struggle with written communications, for example, is to show them by example, okay, here's how you answer a question directly and succinctly. Then you can spend the next paragraphs detailing why something did or did not occur, or if there needs to be next steps and such. But if the partner were to ask you, is the system back up? And the answer is yes, we'll lead with a yes. And then you can explain the why as a small example. If you find situations in your environment that are frustrating, such as the storeroom is not cleaned up, this is a simple example. Okay, there's value to having people see you clean it up once and participating in that process. I don't mean do it for people, I mean do it with people. And you demonstrate that as a team, you can solve any particular problem. You also can set some norms around what is expected, and I'm going to use a fancy phrase here, what are acceptable deviations? You know, not everything can be perfect. Not everything can be imperfect. In between is kind of that Goldilocks phase where it's just right, and you let people know, okay, this is what just right feels like. Let's gravitate towards this or exceed it. And then the last of which is, and I think this is the single biggest challenge with IT people in my professional experience, is helping people recognize when they need help. I don't mean it from the perspective that you wait until a person is failing. Nobody benefits from that. But oftentimes people have pride, they've been siloed, they've siloed themselves, it's been the cultural norm, whatever, and they feel like they got to do it all. And not only is it not possible for any of us to do it all, it's almost always the reality that it gets done better if different people can assist at different points in a project. So helping a person recognize that they may need assistance, helping them learn when to request assistance in advance of when the need needs to occur. And then the last of which is how to work well with each other. Again, leading by example, I feel leads to there's like a positive multiplier effect. More work gets done by more people faster at a higher degree of quality. The pride level goes up and people feel like they own the results. And the net effect was, this was kind of fun.
To build on your point of leading by example, I had a CIO who was not above crawling underneath the table to, you know, plug something in. And I started the joke around the department that And I kind of did it intentionally that you're never too good to crawl under a table. And so I think little things like that speak a lot to people. Luke, what about you?
I really like some of Jim's answers from his wonderful experience. I completely agree with, you know, demonstrate the skills yourself. I think sometimes you have to fake it until you make it, until you have built up the skills, as Jim mentioned. But once you kind of understand the how dynamic an IT department at a law firm can be, I think to add on to that is to allow your IT people to understand how the attorneys and other people that use their software, hardware, how they use it in their actual job, to give them visibility to that, whether it be, you know, sending them to a local trial or taking part of a mock trial or, you know, some type of training where it's primarily for lawyers, but letting your IT staff see that what they're doing makes a difference for their attorneys, rather than just putting out that fire or not putting out that fire and hearing an earful, I think is important. I think the other thing that I've found that works is not waiting until the annual review to tell them that they've done a terrible job or they've done a great job. I think creating a regular schedule of delivering feedback, you know, reviewing project status. I know some of these new Lean Six Sigma project management things help bring some of those gaps to the surface a little sooner. However, I think it really is nice if, you know, management can work with their staff on a regular basis to understand their wants and needs, not only professionally, but personally, because I think another thing that happens that tends to go by the wayside is sometimes people fail to realize that people are living their lives outside of the law firm as well, and understanding, you know, just really what type of person you are, your background, what things you like to do, that can really help, kind of complete the picture.
Yeah, I think, you know, connecting the dots for people on, you know, here's how the work you do every day contributes to the work that the firm does every day is awesome, because that goes back to purpose, and that's what we all need. So how about you, Stuart?
You know, I'd have to also agree that the primary method is by leading by example. And I agree 100% with the crawling under the table and the other examples that have been given in that area. I tend to think that most of the way that I am, I probably have been since I was a child, because I think most of my personality, anything that's good about it, I will attribute to my mother. And the rest I'll take my own responsibility for. So I think the way that we relate to other people, well, it's formed early in life, and it's a little bit hard to make huge changes, but you can, of course, you can still make corrections along the way. But my go-to primary approach is to be what I want my people I work with to be, and to let them see that. But the other thought that I have is that if you observe one of your people interacting in a way that needs correction, you do it immediately or as soon after as possible, because that's when the person may be most teachable, or at least that's when what they just did, or how they talked to the staff person or attorney, or how they handled a situation, it's right there, and you can point to it and say, now let's think how we might have done that better. So my experience with annual reviews is I hate annual reviews. I don't like being reviewed, and I don't like doing reviews much better. And I've found in thinking about those situations, even though it's supposed to be an annual review, most of the examples that I think of or get pointed to have happened very recently. So I do think that feedback, if immediate, if you see something that needs to be corrected, you correct it. is more effective than waiting for a scheduled time to do that. So example and immediate feedback are the approaches that I can think of that I think are effective.
That's exactly one of the points that they make in crucial conversations, is that distance between, you know, when something happens and when it gets talked about, that's a big part of the problem and where resentments build up and things like that. I would add, on kind of a more serious note, because I'm the learning and development geek here along with Luke, is, and this is something I'm working on with a client right now, is competencies. Having clearly defined competencies, defining for each competency, and those, and I would break that into technical competencies and behavioral competencies, and then specifically under each competency, what is basic performance, what is a little more advanced, and then what is considered expert performance. And kind of use your high performers as the examples. So find the person that has the best example of each skill and set that as the high bar, and give people a place to go to, because even if you can't enhance someone's career by promoting them, you know, if there aren't positions for people to promote into, then at least they've got something that they can work towards and have those regular conversations, I would say monthly conversations about projects and then the skills that they're developing. So our last and final topic is, how do you help people convey complex topics in simple ways, or how do you help develop that skill? And Luke, do you want to lead us off?
Yeah, one of my favorite subreddits on the popular social news aggregation site Reddit is Explain It Like I'm Five, or ELI5. And I think this translates directly to IT staff, because like you mentioned, Michelle, oftentimes, and Jim even mentioned it, if, say, an attorney has a question about a certain given thing, or another professional staff has an IT-related question, I've seen it time and time again where, you know, you get the 25-minute robust, here's every inner working little tiny piece of this thing, the fix or whatever it was, when all you really wanted was, is it fixed? And I think imparting that, and as Stuart mentioned, kind of acknowledging it when it happens, that, hey, whether it be written or verbal, you might just kind of lighten up on the big, long, wide answer that kind of goes on, and really pay attention to the audience. So is your attorney probably wants to get back and keep doing billable work, or the professional staff person might just want to say, okay, cool, thanks so much for fixing that. And I think being able to impart something, even though it might have taken you a long time to fix or adjust or complete, really just breaking it down into what does the other person need to know. And then I think in turn, that helps you create a better relationship with that person. It might even, you might even become that person's, you know, tier one support or person they go to, which can be good or bad as an IT person, but will really help in the end with everyone's time.
I agree completely. How about you, Jim?
Wow, that was a really good answer by Luke. Mine's not going to be as good. But let's see. You know, a couple things come to mind. One is, you can't yell at people. Okay, so if anybody's still managing from the perspective that they're yelling at folks to get stuff done, not only is that the wrong thing to do, but that's a career-limiting, you know, practice. Just stop that. I feel I've had success in my career. It took me a little while to figure this out, but I feel that I've had success by starting the conversation off with a conceptual, here's what the answer is. So sometimes that kind of sounds like, you know, you got to lay out a vision or whatever, but let's just use the concept of, you know, there's a lot of talk about taking things to the cloud. Okay. So a good way to start that conversation off, and, you know, you're trying to build, you know, like a foundation of understanding across people, is that our job is to find the safe path to the cloud. So that's something in theory that everybody can understand at a high level. And then you can spend some time and effort, you know, filling in the details, and then that'll later, you know, lead to the creation of steps and the prioritization and such. I found a long time ago, I wish I could take credit for this, I can't, but I was taught the value of trying to get a concept across in three simple points. And then it's up to us to figure out what those three simple points are. So to use as a small example about the cloud, we're headed towards the cloud. We got to find our safe path, and it's going to take all of our collective talents for us to get there. And then you can have the conversation expand there. For the conversations that start off with a half hour of setup and it's unclear what the deliverable is going to be or what a person's involvement is going to be or what the problem is that we're actually trying to solve, I find that you just lose people. So I always like to start off with, okay, you know, what we're trying to accomplish is X and we're going to probably use W, Y, and Z to get there. And let's start talking.
Yeah, I could not agree more with all of those suggestions. I just got back from a conference and I can't tell you how many times I was sitting there looking at my watch 15 minutes in thinking, okay, when are we going to get to the point? And if you want to know somebody who does that all day, every day, that's attorneys. I cannot tell you how many times I've had attorneys tell me, just tell me what to do. Over and over again, just tell me what to do. Because we in IT want to launch into explanations and we have all our geeks speak and our smarts. And if we can just get to the point, you know, tell them why we're here, what we're doing, what, and like Jim said, what the point is, then all the better. How about you, Stuart?
First of all, avoid jargon. I think that we tend to talk, sometimes we talk in acronyms that we understand, but well, you know, the DC was having trouble with DNS, or maybe it was DHCP, and so what? And our attorneys don't know those acronyms, and they don't need to. So I try to avoid using any jargon, acronyms, or terminology that would I don't believe is going to be familiar to the person that we're trying to explain something to. I also totally agree that the approach to explaining, if someone wants an explanation, the first statement has to be a summary or maybe just a statement of how things are, like how, you know, maybe you're working on, you know, there's been a problem, something's down and well, what's the status? Well, first of all, we started doing such and such, and then we found, no, don't just tell me. Give me the straight up right now. This is not a technology example, but I was out of town one time, and this was back when I lived, we had horses, and there was always problems with the gates, and we had heard from a neighbor that the horses were out, and they're, you know, what's happening? We don't know. We're out of town, and I got a phone call from my daughter who was taking care of it. And the very first thing she said when we answered the phone was, it's all good in the hood. Perfect. Okay. We're relieved. I can relax. And now you can explain to me what happened, where we, you know, where the fence was, whatever. I'm ready to listen. So I think that we tend to sometimes just start into this long explanation to begin with. When people really want is just tell me, are we good or not? And so that's those two things. One, no jargon, don't use words other people don't know, and give us good summary up front, and then further explanation if it's wanted. I was we were getting ready to do a implement a two-factor authentication for some of our systems and had said we were going to use this platform. We're going to use Duo and here's how it works. And the president of the board at that point, we said, well, couldn't we just like use two different, you know, like passwords? Well, I started to explain to him like, well, you know, two-factor really means something you know and something you have or something, you know, like, that would, he said, just stop. All you need to tell me is that wouldn't work. Okay, that wouldn't work. Fine, that's all I need. And so, I mean, that was all he wanted to, he didn't need a big explanation. He just wanted to know, hey, there's an idea. Would that work? No. Okay, fine. We'll go with something else. So we love our stuff and we like to explain it, but sometimes all people want is just something simple. But
yeah. One of my favorite examples of that is when I'm talking to attorneys about the cloud and I have the cloud in a diagram, I tell them that that's something that IT people made up because you don't need to know all the inner workings. It's the internet. It's going over, you know, multiple layers of, you know, communications with different pieces of equipment. Mm-hmm. And that's all you need to know. It's not here in our office.
So black box, things go in, things come out, and what happens inside of it, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, people don't always need to know the magic. And I think particularly for your help desk and your support folks, if you can get them to understand when someone just has an urgent need and needs you to just get it done and get them on their way, versus, you know, there are those personality types and those people who want a little more detailed explanation. You know, if the server has been down for 3 hours, then management is going to expect an explanation, but how to put it in the terms that are going to be meaningful for them. And so I think,
yeah, Michelle, I just had one more point as we've been talking. I realized that, well, I didn't realize this, but one of my favorite movies is called Rounders. It's a movie about poker. Mm-hmm. And so I watched it a bunch of times in high school. And then after high school, I got really, really into it. And one of the best books I've ever read is called Caro's Pro Poker Tells. And it's really a book about mannerisms, things people say during the poker game. And if that book, it revolutionized my life of how I was able to kind of read situations. And I think we've addressed a lot of the verbal or written things, but I think also acknowledging body language is super important, both if you're an IT person looking presentable. I know that's really, really, really hard for some IT people to understand, but but also just, you know, while you're saying these things or delivering this message, to really get some understanding of how is the person receiving the message. Because I think you can see more often than not, they'll probably have a confused look on their face. Or maybe if they're strapped for time, they'll check their watch or pretend their phone's ringing or look at their phone, that type of thing. So I think, you know, verbal, nonverbal are equally as important. And I think that if I could recommend one book that doesn't have anything to do with, you know, that type of thing, it'd be Caro's Pro Poker Tells, because it was really an eye-opener.
Something I'm going to have to grab. And it's Crucial Conversations did the same exact thing for me. So I can't recommend that highly enough. Jim or Stuart, do you have any recommendations that have helped you in your careers?
Well, I've got a book that it's really about relationships, I think, but Susan Campbell's the author, and there's a couple of books. And one of the first one is Being Real, and the other one that I've read is Saying What's Real. And her focus, it's really on relationships, and it's about being real about your emotions, what you're feeling. And, you know, I think in business we try or tend to assume that emotions are not part of what we do. We're just all we're all in the brain. You know, it's all on paper, it's all factual. But when someone says something and it makes and you your reaction is to feel something possibly unpleasant, how do you deal with that? And her books have helped me a great deal in that area. Again, I think it's not about business, but maybe like Luke's book is something that could give you a perspective that would help in situations.
Mm-hmm. Great, great. How about you, Jim?
Those are two excellent examples. I think I'm going to go off on the deep end here in a slightly different path.
Great.
And I'm not saying that this is better. I'm just saying this one really resonated with me way back when. I had the opportunity at an ILTA conference to attend an opening session where the keynote speaker was Jim Lovell. He's the astronaut that was on Apollo 13. You know, they made a movie about it, and it was a pretty big deal. He wrote a book about the whole experience, which I found to be absolutely fascinating. And the point of the book that really resonated to me is when you're in a situation where the only answer can be determined by what you have around you and the people that you are with, your focus becomes really critical, and you also have like an intense desire to, okay, you know, let's figure this out. And that's a long-winded setup for my point. I'm not even taking my own advice here and such, is that, you know, sometimes when we're interacting with each other and, you know, we get tied up in the emotions, or a person gets, you know, frustrated at the event and such, we lose sight of the big picture. And going back to a previous point that I made, if our job is to make it better, it is our job as leaders to also point out to people how this individual task is leading us towards something that's going to make it better, and how this research and development or this experimentation or the fact that we just found out that we did something wrong is also a step forward to that progress. And that's something that we can feel positive about. And if I were to sum up everything that I've just said there in that small example, if the goal is to survive and thrive, and I think we all have that, okay, then our first step can be the following, and we can do it as a team. If we can reinforce that, I think we can have positive results.
So I love that we are technologists, and all of us have hit on the point that it's actually about the people, because that's something I push for all of the time. And that ILTACON where Jim Lovell was the first day keynote was my first ILTACON. So that has special meaning to me. If no one else has anything else to say, I will wrap us up with a thought from one of the sessions I attended this week. Anybody else have anything to add before?
I was going to make some cheesy quote about one small step for IT, one giant leap for your law firm, but
too late. We did it.
We went too late, I guess.
Awesome. So with that funny, I'll leave us with a serious thought from a session called Costly Conversations, Why Employee Communication is Busting Your Bottom Line, that I attended this week. The health of a relationship, team, or organization is a function of the average lag time between identifying and discussing problems. This has been a great discussion. Thanks for your time today, and I hope it really benefits the ILTA community.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.